Okay, welcome to the Weekend Water Cooler. I am Jean Bolduc, your host, and joining me now is the incomparable Barbara Fouché of the Carrboro City Council, right? The Carrboro Town Council. I said it. Yeah, I said it wrong. I knew something was missing there. The CTC. The CTC. I love your alphabet soup.
CTC.
We've lost half the audience already. Barbara, I just in the last 2 weeks I thought of you so often, and because I love you, and when. Unfortunately, we've had such a string of occasions that we feel like as we're moving forward, that we just get snatched back from progress. And although I feel like in our community overall, we're sort of ahead of the curve a little bit of the broader community, you know, really understanding some of these challenges racially. We've got a lot of work to do, and I'll be honest with you, I feel like people who look like me are the ones who have the work to do, and I'm not sure that everybody's really had their heads around this, but I feel like something has changed, and I'd like to sit back for a minute and hear you tell me whether or not you feel like something's changed. Because until you feel it, I don't think it matters what I think.
I appreciate the opportunity, especially at this time, and thank you for reaching out to me to come on the show. It has been a tough week and a half. Watching Mr. Floyd literally die in the street at the hands of those who are sworn to protect and serve, hit America hard, right. Especially Black folks. Right. And it took all of us back in time, right?
Right.
It's like, okay, I thought we had progress. What's going on here? This man died in the street with a knee on his neck at the hands of the police.
Right.
Where are we?
Yeah.
So to answer your question, Jean, and I actually was thinking about this morning, like how far have we really come? So for Black folk, it's like 400 plus years, right?
Right.
There was slavery, there was rape, there was torture, there was separation of families.
All of which was legal.
All of which was legal, you know.
Quote unquote, right.
Dehumanization at every level, you know, physically, mentally, however it could be done, it was done.
Right.
Today, it's still going on.
It is.
It's just more subtle, and you know, it just kind of slides in, you know, in different ways. Personally, for myself, I know about the microaggressions, you know, that you know that still exists. I feel them. The going in the stores and you know, people are looking at you.
Man, eyes watching, right?
Yeah. No, I didn't ask you for no help. I'm coming in here. I know what I'm coming to get. You know, people literally following. Instances where I'm walking down the street, people will cross to the other side of the street. You know, just these different little things, you know, that are noticeable.
Right.
I have been in a state of hypervigilance this week, you know, just very emotional.
Right.
And just really trying to wrap my head around that picture that I keep seeing on TV. And then people talking about the man that Mr. Floyd was, and you know, his family members, his children, and for him to lose his life like that in the street, you know, just saying, I can't breathe, you know, calling for his mother. You know, his mother, I think has been deceased, you know, for some years.
Just a couple of years though, not very long.
And he knew he was on his way out.
I know.
Like, Lord, I'm getting ready to die right here in the street on my stomach.
I know.
So that's kind of where I've been, you know, in a nutshell. And, you know, at the same time, some things that have been happening as far as council, you know, we had a very tough discussion Tuesday night. We had some community members to come into our meeting and speak. community members, you know, Latinx, you know, Black.
Right.
Just talking about what they have been going through as it relates to COVID-19 and
right.
how their needs were not being met by us.
Right.
So that opened up a whole nother conversation about what are we doing and what do we need to do better.
Right.
And we continue, right. we will continue that conversation this Tuesday night. So,
yeah, yeah. I mean, I think you're going to be having that conversation for the next year.
Yeah,
you can't. Some forum or another.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just going to be ongoing. The council members have come forth with some action items that that we want to see happen, you know, to assist Black and Brown community members during COVID-19, and also just in general going forward. As local government, I feel, and I think my council members do as well, we do have a responsibility for the public health and safety and well-being of our community members. And we need to do all that we can do as a municipality to assist them. You know, there right. are things that we can do. There are certain things right. we can't do, but certainly as much as we can do, we need to just dig our heels in and do it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's such a it's an unimaginable challenge for me that the local municipalities are facing from councils up to the county commissioners, and I suppose at the state level, but mainly locally in the budgeting process, because yeah. I just, what in the world is going to be, what is the pot of money that you're going to have, and how could you possibly feel like you know what it's going to be.
We don't know. We know the sales tax revenue. We know that's down.
You right.
know, property tax could be down too, depending on who has the ability to pay.
Right. Right.
So, and how they pay. I mean,
yeah.
You know, so,
and I mean, I guess you can at least show those on a balance sheet as receivables, even if they're not paid on time.
Right. Right.
That you can still budget using the money, but you know, the federal government can run a deficit and nobody else can. And that's one of the reasons that I think is lost on some people, that why is it that local and state are always looking to the federal government for help in this kind of situation? That's the reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because nobody but the federal government can run that kind of, can run a deficit really of any kind, I think.
It's going to be a big deficit too.
Well, you know, what else is new, I guess, is the question. It's just too bad that so much debt from the federal government has been you know, dropped on the credit card for the sake of giving rich people tax breaks. You know, now you've spent it all and you're just going to spend more. And it's, you know, the value of money is starting to lose meaning. But I mean, at this point, I think everybody is, you know, so focused on, we feel like it's important to stay alive.
Yes.
And, I'm so reminded watching the funeral service yesterday and watching Reverend Sharpton. I'm so reminded of something I heard Al McShirley say years ago. Mm-hmm. And he said this all the time. It's hard to love you, brother, when your boot is on my neck.
Yep.
And
that's him. That is Al McShirley.
In a nutshell. I mean, that should be on his headstone. Because it's so accurate. It's so accurate. The onus of, you know, being loving and welcoming and fixing civil rights problems has so consistently been dropped in your lap and not in mine, Barbara, that, you know, that's been backwards all along. And it feels to me, we're going to take a quick break, but it feels to me like maybe people are starting to get that because as I looked at these crowds over the last 2 weeks, I'm seeing a great rainbow of combinations of demographics out in these crowds. And it's not just people who look like you. It's a lot mm-hmm. of people and young people, which always makes me feel better, who look like me. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back with Barbara Fushi, we're going to solve absolutely every problem that exists in America. Right, Barbara?
Yeah.
I think Barbara passed out when I said that. Okay, that was just a little joke there. Okay, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. You're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Barbara Fushi. And of course, we're having a million laughs during the break because frankly, right now in the world, we need a good laugh. Do we not, Barbara? Am I right on this? Are you with me on this? Okay.
I'm with you, 100. We need to laugh as much as possible.
Yeah, I'm telling you. The world could use it. The world could use it. So, oh my God, where to start? I think one thing, one thing I kind of get on the record here is that, and gosh, I hope you agree with me because we didn't discuss this before we came back on, is that I have a lot of appreciation, respect, and affection, even, for someone who I've only met once or twice, but who I follow with great interest, and that's your police chief, Walter Horton.
Oh, too bad. Gentle giant.
And, you know, that's exactly what I was going to say. I look at him, and to me, he epitomizes great personal strength.
Mm-hmm.
He has terrific integrity, I feel. He's accountable.
Mm-hmm.
He has his own personal story that's of interest, but what it really does is, you know, he is a person of Carrboro.
Yep.
So, and he's policing the community where he grew up.
Mm-hmm.
He's invested in good outcomes. But I feel like he can convey the kind of strength that you want in a law enforcement leader.
Yes.
When it's necessary.
Mm-hmm.
But the main way that he conveys strength that I notice and really appreciate is his gentility, his tenderness as a human being.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't know that that's a thing that we can train in police officers, but he absolutely models that, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish that a lot more police officers were training under a person like him, rather than this fool in Minneapolis who killed George Floyd. This officer was a training officer. He was a lead officer among these four accused murderers now. Two of those officers had only been on the job for 4 days. And they were working with this officer to be trained. He trained to kill. Well, and so my question automatically, maybe not other people's, but I mean, his defense attorneys, their defense attorneys, two of these officers are going to be, but he's the senior officer. What were they to do? They're supposed to follow his orders. Now, yeah, okay, wait. Now, my immediate response to that is, am I to understand that if you were coming along on the street as a sworn officer with a gun on your hip, and you were to come across anyone else being murdered, that you're expected to stand by unless your lead officer, who could be on a bathroom break, unless he tells you to step in, you don't know to do that? You shouldn't be a cop if you have to be told what's the right thing to do here. The right thing is to interrupt a murder. Now, you know, Barbara, that I've said last week, pretty early on, I think, this was a lynching. I mean, this is the reason, in my opinion, that this has struck such an emotional hot wire across the country. Everyone now has witnessed a lynching in real time, on television,
in broad daylight
with people around, and it's traumatic. It's extremely traumatic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm concerned about the teenage girl who recorded this on her phone. Thank goodness she did. But I hope someone's looking after her, because
I'm
this
sure
is
they are.
Extremely traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
To have that pressure of being the one, if you're taking the picture, I know journalists go through this plenty. If you're taking a picture and you're part of the coverage and you don't step in to interrupt something, you feel like you're bound to feel guilt about it, whether it's legitimately was ever really possible. She was not going to step in and stop four white cops.
Mm-mm.
From stomping on this guy. It would have just been her with a black eye and broken arm and no video.
Right.
Instead, that's what we would have had instead. We've already had that 10,000 times, so we know what that looks like. But she did exactly the right thing, and it's changed the world, I hope. I hope. And I you know, I look at Carrboro and I wish that everybody could experience that example. I mean, I'm sure that there are examples of imperfect policing in Carrboro. I'm, you know, they're human beings. That surely has happened. But I do just want to give that shout out to Chief Horton, because the most important thing here, as we look to reform, is to find examples of what it, you know, you need to, when you're screaming to change something, you better have a really good idea of what it is you want. Otherwise, you're just complaining.
Yep.
And what I want is I want, you know, 500,000 more Walter Hortons out in the community doing the work of policing. And now that I've laid that marker down, I'd like to hear your argument against it, which you don't have one.
I don't have one. And I hope you got, I'm pretty sure you did. Did you get the opportunity to read Chief Horton's statement that he put out on social media? So just a really good statement, and coming from a very good person, you know, solid, gentle, you know, compassionate, knows the community, grew up in the community, and is not going to take any dismiss. I mean, this is just not, this is just, he will not be a part of anything like this ever. I am 100% confident of that. I wanted to go back to what you said about, I think a couple of the officers being in training and being new, you know, but I agree with you 100% that training or not, common sense would kick in.
Yeah.
For you to say, hey, what you doing? I mean, because there's three other officers watching this.
Right.
And you can't tell me that those three couldn't have pulled him off of George Floyd.
That's right.
There was an opportunity there that if they had to grab him around the neck or do something, y'all could have pulled him off of Mr. Floyd.
Yeah. So they didn't even raise their voices about it.
Right. So when you come with this saying that the officer who killed Mr. Floyd is on suicide watch. Okay. And then you got the defense, you know, for the other officer saying, well, they were in training. They had only been on for a couple of days. Mm-mm.
Isn't that
common sense? Common sense kicks in at some point. People know right from wrong. And you're standing there literally listening, watching.
Right.
This officer kill this man.
Right.
And do nothing.
Right. And they check his pulse. One of them checked his pulse, found no pulse, and three more minutes go by. What is that?
What does that mean? What kind of training were y'all getting?
Exactly. What the hell kind of training is this? Can I just ask exactly which training is that? Is that law enforcement training or is that Klan training? Because I feel like,
you bring up the Klan.
Okay, that's the Klan, baby. That's what that
Klan
is.
Training right there. And then the police officer had his hand in his pocket. just ensuring that he's pressing, you know, that's even harder, you know, just pressing his body down, you know, on the floor.
And he straightens up, he's upright with weight on his left knee and his hand in his pocket. And what that does is it provides the leverage to make sure that his maximum body weight is on the neck. His hand is in his pocket to demonstrate how casual he can be about doing this. I'm surprised he didn't pull out his smartphone to check his email while he's in the midst of this action. That's all of this in my, this is just Gene's opinion, Barbara, but I think all of this is what makes it a lynching. It's a lynching is not, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Mm-hmm. A lynching is not just a murder. It's to make a point of intimidation and make a broader threat. And boy, that's what happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happened.
When I heard the news that he was on, the officer was on suicide watch, I find it difficult to say his name. So you hear me, I'm just saying the officer. So you know who I'm talking about.
Right.
When I heard it was on suicide watch, I was just like, and I know I shouldn't feel that way, but I'm just really kind of like, and what? I mean, what you want? Are we saying that because are we supposed to feel sorry for him? Is it just information? Does anybody care? Does anybody care? And then his wife, the officer's wife, she said, look, she apologized. And she said, I'm divorcing him. She said, I don't want to be attached to this mess. Did she know he was that crazy or whatever? Well, whatever was going on with him, I just don't know. But I just and I want to bring up. I hate to do it, but I'm gonna have to. I want to bring up Drew Brees. While we in this conversation, bring up Drew Brees. One of the greatest quarterbacks ever. You know, athletic ability. Right.
Right.
You said what you said. You get the backlash, and then you want to try to say again. No, not today. Well, not today. Because the backlash is what made you come back around the second time and apologize.
That's
and whatever
exactly
else
right.
it was you were saying. So first, you know, you basically give us your behind the kiss. I hate to say it. Excuse me, everybody just listening, but I've had a rough week and a half, and I'm trying to be, but basically, that's what it is. You give a show behind the kiss, and then when there's this backlash, you know, you want to come back and say, oh, I'm sorry. I want to do everything I can to help. No.
Yeah, he what did he say? Misread it or, you know, whatever his nonsense was. You know, it's just. I want to stick on that point, and when we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to talk about exactly that point, because I think that that's one of the, and I wouldn't call it a microaggression. I would say that this is one of the things in how we talk that makes a big difference. That maybe people are going to be open to trying to understand why this is the way it is. And we're talking with Barbara Fushi. We're going to be right back. You're listening to The Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Right back. And we're back with Barbara Fushi, who thankfully is laughing. Please don't ever lose your sense of humor, Barbara.
I try not to.
I just don't know what I'd do. You know what I'm saying? All right. So I just want to just give you a closing thought about Drew Brees. I was able to pronounce his name without cursing. I guess that's a step forward for me.
Mm-hmm.
In my life, I've had the unfortunate experience of having a friend, a person who was a friend for a long time, say something to me that was just so much. It was just so much wrong that, you know, I just kind of held my hand up in our friendship and said, yeah, I'm taking a little time out. And she was at first apologetic, as we've just been discussing. Here was the apology. And then when my response to the apology was all the same, I just need to take some time because I was very upset the last time we talked. And then she kind of unleashed it on me. And that really was the end of it. Okay. So here's my thing that I really think there are people in the world, many of them, who just don't get this. The idea is, oh, I pulled out the long knives and I said this thing that hurt you. I took a swipe at you. But now I'm going to come back the next day and say, I'm sorry I lost my temper, or I'm sorry, this is my personal favorite. I'm sorry if I offended you. So you're only sorry if I was offended. You're not just sorry that you said that on your own, that you lost your crap and then you said stupid things. Mm. You're mainly sorry if, I guess, and only if it offended me. Well, that's the famous non-apology apology, right? But with people like Mr. Breeze, I think that the thing that apparently is not impressed upon him sufficiently is that sometimes apology is not enough. Apology is not only not enough, it's practically nothing. If you spin around the next day and say, oops, I lost followers on Twitter. Oops, my fans are upset. I must be sorry. It's completely disingenuous. And this loops around for me, Barbara, the point I'm making about Chief Horton is that he has the very thing that is the most important thing in policing specifically, which is credibility. Trust.
And a lot of it, 100.
If, 100. You know, his department is not immune from human beings making mistakes, but if that happens, and I feel this way about Biden too, if that happens, he's going to step out and say, this bad thing happened. I'm looking into it. I'm going to take care of it. It will not happen again. And I believe him because I trust him. I felt that way about Obama, I can see where there were criticisms about various things in his administration, but the big thing was right, which is I trust him that he has a personal integrity, a deeply seated sense of right and wrong, love for his
Yes.
Right? Love for his family and his country, just like mine. And, I'll wait and see what he has to say, whatever it is. I'll wait and see what he has to say about it because I trust him. Now, with Drew Brees, I trust that he had an agent that said, oh, people are upset. You need to say something else. I'm not going to waste my time having any concern or...
Yeah,
trying to come to his point of view. I just can't. Don't want to hear about it.
Thank you, Jean. Thank you for saying that. Let me co-sign that with you. I am at a point in time where you better get it right the first time. It's time out for the second chances, right? We've been doing this for a minute. And
yes.
With everything going on and you come out in the way you come out, you meant what you said, right?
Right.
And then, like you said, the agent told you, hey, man, you have to come out with something else because these people, there's a lot of backlash. So your whole purpose is diluted. It's gone. Nobody's listening. It sounds like a lot of background noise.
Right. So he needs to do the very thing that the chief of police in Houston said to the president last week. If you can't say something constructive, you need to shut your mouth. That's a direct, exact quote. And this idea among famous white people that they can't just say something and fix it, they're going to have to get used to that idea. Sometimes you can't just say something and fix it. sometimes the thing for you to do is shut up.
You're safer that way.
Well, and it
keeps you off the hot seat.
It does that, but the most important thing that it demonstrates is at least some amount of humility, which is missing. Mm-hmm. And boy, oh boy, is it missing in the White House. We don't have enough airtime or money for FCC violations to say what we really think about this president having Lafayette Park cleared by way of tear gas and rubber bullets against a nonviolent demonstration in order for him to walk across to the church, to St. John's Church, for a photo op publicity stunt that's going to be part of a campaign video. And, you know, now we have the Secretary of Defense saying, oh, I went along with that, but I didn't know where we were walking to. That's a child's answer. That's a child's excuse. It is just so laughable.
And then, I went over there with you, but I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know what we was going to do.
Right. Well, it's good to know, right? So the next time I'm around Secretary Esper, I'm just going to say to him, come on, we're just going to go over to this bank. I don't have any money deposited there, but we're just going to go take some out anyway. And, you know, don't worry about it. You don't need to know where we're going. You know, you don't want to hear from a leader, I didn't know where we were going. That is the most ridiculous thing I think I ever heard. And consider the competition for the most ridiculous thing I've heard this year. Wow.
I'm going to tell you what. This is where I am today, Jean.
Yes.
If I don't feel like you going with me and we not going in the same direction.
Step aside.
Go by right. me.
Right.
I don't have time for...
Right.
I don't have time for fake and phony. It's time out for that because too many people that look like me are dying. They're in peril. You know, a lot of things going on. So
yes.
in my mind, racism continues to be the tipping point.
Yes.
What are we going to do for the 1,000th time? What are we going to do? Right. Can we just get there and do it and keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it? That's why these people keep protesting. They're like, look, this is one time too many. I'm tired.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Right.
You had Breonna. You had Ahmaud. Now you got George Floyd. Within a matter of months. What are we doing?
What's happening? That's just this year, and that's hardly
that's
a complete
this year,
list.
The most recent.
Not a complete list, right?
No.
Not a complete list.
Just the most recent ones, and then they came so close together, right? So we hear about it. It's like, okay, so this is going on. Okay, bam, here go Ahmaud. Okay, wait, we got one more. Okay, here go Mr. Floyd.
Right.
So it's just, and on top of this pandemic, people fed up anyway. They're scared. A lot of stuff going on. You know, COVID-19. And then on top of it, here we are, you know, with this, you know, running side by side. So there's just a lot of agitation, a lot.
It's the temperature, you know, it's a fever.
Temperature's high too, Jean.
Yeah, the temperature is high. And it's going to get higher. I'll tell you what, I need to slip in one more break, Barbara, and then.
Oh, no problem.
When we come back, we're going to have our full segment to talk about where this is going the rest of the summer. And I think you just teased where we are on this, because I agree with you. We're talking with Barbara Fushi, my good buddy. And you know, you're listening to the Weekend Water Cooler on 97.9 The Hill, the at-home edition, because, you know, COVID's still going on. You know, it wasn't canceled for lack of interest. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Okay, we're back with Barbara Fushi with our closing moments, and we're talking about is there another topic, Barbara? I remember, I'm old enough to remember, as they say in the overused expression, when Black Lives Matter was thought to be kind of this extreme position. I don't think it is anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I think a whole lot of people are finally getting, I don't hear the all lives matter nonsensical pushback that we used to hear when people would say black lives. I don't hear the blue lives matter at all, mm-hmm. which is good.
You can't say it right now. Yeah, I ain't saying that nowhere.
You can't say it. I think that I do think that we're at an inflection point. I will tell you very honestly, I have a certain increased level of baseline anxiety about the president. He's cornered. He's wrong. He's afraid. And I think that this stunt at the church, which was in fact only for him to have an alternative message to balance out the response to stories about the fact that he was moved to the bunker in the White House at one point earlier in the week. I think it was Monday. That is a ridiculous stunt to put up. That is beyond ridiculous. He should be impeached and removed just for that. Just for that. And I can tell you, if Barack Obama did that, he'd be impeached, removed, and other things by now. The Congress would have acted swiftly. And the Congress should act swiftly about this. This is just an obscenity, what happened in front of that church. A priest was evacuated out of that building to make that event possible. Because you wouldn't want to let a priest be in that building.
When that's going on outside. Right? I was waiting for the lightning bolt. I'm not going to lie to you. I was waiting for the lightning bolt.
Well, somebody created a little fake video of him being struck by lightning out in front of on the steps of the church. That was oddly satisfying to
watch. It was just so blasphemous. And then all you do is stand there holding a Bible. And you don't reference it at all.
Yeah,
you don't try to do a tie-in.
That's like the other thing. You're surrounded by employers. I think Anderson Cooper said it best. He said, "You know, there he is, a Bible in hand, surrounded by employers, reporters, and nothing to say.
Nothing.
You can't open it up and talk about healing the breach. You can't talk about being the repairer of the breach." You can't come up with a reference of any kind about the golden rule, loving your brother, loving your neighbor as you do yourself. Even the most rudimentary kindergarten reference to the Bible that even Ivanka could have come up with while she's pulling it out of her $1,500 purse to hand you this Bible.
Girl, $5,000 purse. She probably ain't got
$1,500. Well, I'm sure she gets a discount because, you know, rich people are good at getting stuff for free.
Well, true
that. So here's my thing. I've been impressed. Maybe impressed is too strong a word. I guess I feel like finally, that some of these generals are coming forward and they're saying, this can't go on. I can't be silent anymore. I feel, Barbara, that this is going to be a summer of this getting hotter and hotter and hotter, that these protests are going to go on and on. And this needs to shift and focus toward the structure of racism that is the undergirding of this over-policing and this sheer abuse of blocks of our fellow citizens on the basis of the color of their skin. Mm-hmm. It's an abomination. It's an abomination.
It is an abomination.
I wrote this little book, African Americans of Durham and Orange Counties, and at the end of it, at the risk of giving away my flourish at the end, I talked about how the Klan represents a virus that attacks the body politic when the immunization system is weak. And that's where we are.
I love that, Jane.
We're in a state of extreme weakness politically.
You should tweet that out.
Oh, maybe I will. I'll take a picture.
Please
of
do.
I
yeah,
will.
Tweet it
I
out.
Will.
That's excellent.
And, you know, I think that we understand about fighting viruses and protecting ourselves from viruses. We're at a heightened awareness of what it means to fight a virus. And it takes everybody in the system to fight the virus. Your whole body fights a virus. It doesn't just attack your elbow. you know? So that's where I am, Barbara. I'm fighting the virus. You and me together, and anybody who's listening, and God love our listeners. They're wonderful. I thank you for joining me today. I thank mm-hmm. our listeners for listening. It's a great privilege for us to be in anyone's dashboard in their radio, or if they're listening online or following on our podcast. And I think these are important times for us to talk to people who are willing to just put it out there. And you're always willing to put it out there. And I dearly love you for that. And I thank wish you and Braxton all the best, and keep up your good work. Keep up your good work. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, Jane.
Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Water Cooler, everyone. And we're going to move on.